Well, we are glad to be back with you today. It has been a rough couple of weeks. I feel like we're falling apart.
Not me.
He says not me, but one of the reasons we haven't been able to record for a long time is he has been Stuffy McGee over here.
Totally fine.
Anyway, we're going to get right into today's episode with one of my favorite poems, The Tide Rises, The Tide Falls, by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow.
The tide rises, the tide falls.
The twilight darkens, the curlew calls. Along the sea sands, damp and brown, the traveler hastens toward the town.
And the tide rises, the tide falls.
Darkness settles on roofs and walls, but the sea in darkness calls. The little waves with their soft white hands efface the footprints in the sands.
And the tide rises, the tide falls.
The morning breaks, the steeds in their stalls stamp and neigh as the hostler calls. The day returns, but nevermore returns the traveler to the shore.
And the tide rises, the tide falls. We are Red Weather Christians.
I'm Jen.
And I'm Steve. We're here working through what drives, motivates, and inspires us to act.
Whether it's a career, a religion, a family, or panicking? Does it even make us happy?
So on today's episode, we're focusing on panicking, but specifically that extra oomph you get from a moral panic.
So you might be wondering, I'm sure you're wondering, why did they start with an old poem? I love this poem. Is it a little depressing? Yes. Did the guy in the poem die, the guy who never returns to the shore? Yes. Did the tide efface his footprints so he is left having made no mark in this world? Yes. But I also think it's a good reminder that no matter what we do, no matter what happens to us or the people we love, the tide rises and the tide falls.
And Longfellow has also come and gone.
Bye.
This may be his mark that he left, but he is likely to be forgotten eventually.
No, no. He's a famous poet. He has immortality.
Look, say what you will, but there are plenty of poets who came and went in the Middle Ages, and I have no idea who they are.
Well, we're not going to forget Longfellow anytime soon.
Just give it 500 years. So, if you're not familiar with the term moral panic, you've probably at least been involved in a moral panic of your own at some point.
A moral panic is a widespread feeling of fear, often an irrational one, that some evil person or thing threatens the values, interests, or well-being of a community or a society. It is the process of arousing social concern over an issue, usually perpetuated by moral entrepreneurs and the mass media, and exacerbated by politicians and lawmakers.
Yep. So this first came about as a term from Stanley Cohen. He wrote about it in Folk Devils and Moral Panic from 1972. And yeah, we are starting to see that more and more, where an issue is not just an issue, it becomes a moral issue. You didn't get vaccinated, it's a moral issue. You did get vaccinated, also a moral issue. What?
Yeah, everything is starting to become intertwined, and things are getting frenetic, and things are getting a little confusing. So we want to talk about it.
So we want to go back and think about moral panics from our lives that didn't pan out like they said they would.
Right.
Let's just start. We weren't necessarily involved in it, but we were aware of it. In the 1980s, there came to be known
the AIDS epidemic.
Yeah.
Yes. I remember hearing things like, don't sit on the toilet seat without a cover because you might get AIDS. And very quickly, I mean, I'm just a kid, you know, so this is what I'm picking up as a kid. I'm picking up that this is a gay person issue. I'm picking up that this is from monkeys. I'm picking up that this is dirty. I am picking up that this is coming from a dirty lifestyle. all these things that are, of course, completely twisted, but that's what I'm getting as a kid.
Yeah. And then comes along Magic Johnson, famous NBA basketball player, and he contracts HIV. Not full-blown AIDS, just HIV positive. And all of a sudden, people are wondering about his sexual orientation. They're wondering about what kind of lifestyle he leads behind closed doors.
I wouldn't even say they're wondering. I would say people start making judgments about this guy.
And, right, it was then, as it started to unfold, it wasn't just homosexuals who had AIDS. Okay. It wasn't just drug users who shared dirty needles who had AIDS. Okay. And slowly but surely, we realized, wait, so it's not homosexuality. It's not promiscuity. It's not just drug use or dirty needles. Where was the panic? What did that do us? We just started hating people for their lifestyle, and it had nothing to do with AIDS, or very little to do with the actual virus.
Well, with the AIDS thing, everybody certainly panicked just because they didn't want to contract AIDS. But then they turned it into a moral panic as well with the, you only get AIDS if you're living an immoral lifestyle. That is why you get AIDS. So yeah, it just turned into a huge mess. And what good did it do anyone?
What good did it do to panic is what we're talking about. Another one that came up that we've already mentioned in the last season was about sex education.
Yeah. Remember our episode, Sex Ed. Go check it out if you haven't listened yet. Shameless plug.
Curriculums in school would have various puberty lessons or sex education lessons. They were basically telling you what you needed to know, or simple things, body parts.
Yeah, and the parents just rebelled. A lot of them saw it as a morality issue and that they didn't want anybody else teaching their sons and daughters about this topic because it's a morality issue to be discussed at home. And if you remember from our episode, my mom wanted to sign me out of my sex ed class, and I convinced her to leave me in. Not because I was like, oh, I just really want to learn about all this stuff, but more so of, it would be embarrassing if I was sent to the library, Mom. So, yes, got to put the condom on the banana, all that.
How about this other one, which we've talked about, abortion. Now, lots of times, and I've heard it said, that this decision is between a woman and her doctor or her physician. And yet, that's no longer the case anymore, is it, Jen?
No, it's not. In many states, it's not.
And when we were growing up, this seemed like something to panic about. You can't possibly vote for someone who would be in favor of abortion. You can't possibly think of ever having an abortion. There's no reason you would ever want that for anyone.
And the messaging that I heard was that if there was a baby inside of you and you got an abortion, you were a murderer. And that is not what God wants us to be. And it was pretty clear cut, pretty simple messaging that it's not allowed. It is a morality issue. And you're going to be in some serious trouble with God if you get an abortion. I remember when, I want to say it was Target or maybe Mervyn's, if that's even still a store, that started supporting Planned Parenthood or something like that. And I remember for a little time in my life, my mom did not shop at those places as her like Christian stand on morality or against the immorality.
Well, and also abortion came with the idea that only someone who was sexually promiscuous would even think of an abortion because it wasn't inside of wedlock or it wasn't
planned. It was a rabbit hole of immorality.
Which is simply not always the case. And we have seen that change in our lives over the years.
Right. I think next up is sexuality. When I was growing up, it was a little bit of a panicky thought that, you know, your child might turn into a homosexual. And I never really talked to my parents about it as far as I was growing up, probably because I was obviously into boys and they didn't have any concern. But I think among especially Christian parents, when Steve and I were growing up, it was definitely a moral panic if your son or daughter turned out to be gay.
And again, the moral side is there's something wrong with that person or that decision or whatever path they've chosen or taken or found themselves on. It's not just you're panicking about their well-being, because some parents were panicking in the sense that, oh, it will be harder for them if they are homosexual.
Yes, yes. And which was very true and still is true to an extent.
But it went beyond that. It was, this is wrong. We need to prevent this from happening.
Right. And it wasn't happening so much as we were growing up, but the moral panic of this fluid gender kind of idea of you choose your gender or you grow up enough to realize that, hey, I don't feel like I am the gender that I was assigned to at birth, and a lot of different things like that. Again, a lot of gray area with that. But there's a lot of moral panic from, I think, religious people in the sense that if they are coming from a position where they believe in the Bible that says, like, God created man and God created woman, then in their minds, there is no gray area. So when there starts to become a gray area, it's cause for moral panic.
And keep in mind that gray area that's the moral panic is one when people choose. We're completely omitting the moral panic that doesn't exist at all for someone who didn't choose and is born intersex. Because we don't panic about that. There's no morality issue there. And yet, it's the same or very similar. Here's another one. And this one has been twisted and bent throughout the ages. It's not new. It's the actual reason you might have a moral panic, and that is the topic of ethics. Are things different for different people in different circumstances ethically? Can a company who's trying to make money for their investors do things a little bit unethically and make money, and that's okay because that's business. That's how business works. You shouldn't get uppity about that, Jen. You shouldn't have a moral panic that they're outsourcing jobs, that they're using child labor, that they're, you know, they're cutting corners somewhere and someone's getting hurt. They're exploiting some sort of resource somewhere in some nation that we just don't know about or end up caring about. Where's the moral panic there? Is that more allowed?
Yeah, this is really annoying. I'm just sitting here like shaking my head. I'm just annoyed because we have, like Steve said, we choose to panic morally. It's a choice. And so clearly we have chosen not to morally panic about some of these ethical issues that seem to me to be pretty bad.
And so there are other things that have come and gone, like the tide rises and tide falls, that have stirred in us various emotions. Various presidencies have come and gone, and we're okay still.
I mean, some people would disagree.
The tide rose and the tide fell.
Some people would say that the state of the United States is not okay.
They can think that it's worse, sure, but it's been a progression of various presidents, various leadership throughout the years. And if it's gotten worse, it's been a lot of people who've had a hand in that. Not one person was responsible for ruining everything.
True, true. And we're not saying that okay is super great and the United States is better than all the other countries. We're saying it's doing okay.
And the other reality that we want to bring into this is, how did that either president or elected official actually affect your life? Or specifically, how did you let it affect your life?
I think we let it affect our lives a lot more than how it actually affected our lives.
And that's what we're looking at. Moral panic generally comes from being over-engaged with the world and under-engaged with community. If you go back to the definition we told you about, and it was stirred up by mass media. Now, you can call the media whatever names you want. Fake news on both sides of the aisle. It stirs up this panic in us.
It does, and I think that's what keeps them in business. Are you hearing this, people? If you are out there watching the news, you think about that. Why are they in business? They're stirring something up within us.
What do I need to be worried about now? Today? 2 hours ago?
Yeah, it's overwhelming. And I don't think that it's good for our mental health. I don't think it's good for our stress levels. So maybe let's step away from it a little bit or a lot of it.
Because if we look at two things, there's the circle of control in our lives, things that are actually within our control. Day-to-day activities, what store we shop at, what schools we go to a certain extent, things like that. We can affect those things. Then there's the circle of influence in our lives. All the things we read that influence those decisions.
Like influencers.
Right.
You don't read them, I suppose. You watch them, but it's a whole thing, and that's a whole other issue, too. It's not just the news and railing against the news, but it's all the influencers out there, too, telling us how we're supposed to live and how to be happy and what we need to buy in order to do that, because almost all of them are sponsored by products and they're pushing to sell them because they get a percent. So we just have to be really aware of it.
Right. And knowing that difference, being aware and knowing the difference between what you can control and what's influencing your decisions is big. And it reduces our panic. I can't get panicked about something way out of my control. That doesn't help anybody.
I mean, it reminds me of one of my mom's favorite Bible verses, actually. Which of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to his life? I mean, say what you want to say about the Bible, but I think there's some truth to that one. It's not going to do us any good. What can we actually control? Let's focus on that.
But if we were to panic, is there anything worth panicking about, Jen?
Well, going back to the ethics, I think there are some things that would make me feel justified anyway in panicking. I would feel justified. But I don't know, panicking, I don't ever know that there's a time you need to panic, even in a situation which is very panic-inducing. Like, I don't know, your child is in a life or death situation or something like that. I get it that panic might give you some adrenaline, but ultimately, I think of, now I don't know anything about the army and the military, but I think they're trained to remain calm and do what they need to do, but try to remain calm. And so even in a situation where it's life or death, your adrenaline might be pumping, but as much as you can, try to remain calm and not panic. Right?
Right. And the other things that I would say maybe are worth panicking about are still wildly out of my control. If I think about human rights issues across the globe, I can't control those things. I can vote with my money and buy products that are treating people humanely. I can support organizations, but I can't change the laws in other countries.
I feel like we talk about this a lot, but a lot of these things are just pointing inwards to our own community and doing what we can do in our community to help make things better. So you're talking about human rights or whatever. I'm thinking about, hey, there is a secondhand store a couple apartments down from where we live that is trying to help give these street boys an opportunity to gain some job skills. Let's go support them. Let's donate stuff. Let's buy stuff. Let's spread the word that this store exists and have our friends support them. Or just trying to buy our fruit from our frutteria lady down the street as much as we can to support her and her family. But getting to know your own community, and again, going back to your circle of control, what's in your control? Focus on those things. There's no need to panic, but focus on those things.
Those are maybe some things about panicking, but we want to circle back to the idea of moral panic. Like, oh my gosh, the world is going less and less Christian every day. What do we do, Jen? What do we do? It's gonna be bad.
I don't know. If you're a Christian, you can just like rest easy and be like, it doesn't matter. I'm going to heaven.
You can. But then there are laws and secularization of states and things that make it seem like the U.S. is no longer a Christian nation, or that the world is devolving into immorality. Shouldn't we panic about that? Isn't that something to worry about?
Well, definitely, yeah.
And we're going to circle back to one that we've talked about again. Let's go to abortion and the moral panic that still exists within that topic. What came from abortion being legalized in the United States? Now, we did not mention this in our other episode, but if you look at 20 years after abortion was made legal in the city of New York, crime rate dropped drastically. And we give credit to the mayor at that time.
Yeah, we did. And I remember that too. I remember that being in the news. Crime is way down. Wow. what a great job they're doing in the city. And then later on as an adult, Steve and I learned that, oh man, like there is a really lovely correlation here with something else other than the mayor and the politicians that we all accredited to cleaning up the city. And it was that people were having abortions. And, you know, as uncomfortable as that may make some of you feel, you have to take into account that sometimes abortions happen because the mother and maybe also the father realize, I cannot give this child a stable life. And they may also know that if I give birth to this baby, I'm not going to be able to give it up for adoption. You know, there are, it's complicated. There are lots of emotions involved. But, you know, maybe give some credit for some of the people realizing I'm not going to give the baby a stable family life. And that baby may turn into a not great person.
Well, we look at that. Generally, crime comes from people who are desperate. People are in troubled situations. And the whole point of abortion being legalized and then being available was it was always available for people with enough money. And that's where the difference is here. It was suddenly available and legal for someone who didn't have the means to otherwise hide this pregnancy and terminate it.
Right, because let's not forget that abortions were absolutely still happening. It wasn't like, oh, well, abortions just aren't happening anymore. It was a socioeconomic issue.
And then if we consider that crime might incite a moral panic in us, then here we have a solution to crime, and they're opposing moral panics.
Ay, ay, ay. Well, I'm going to start moral panicking about the confusion of moral panics.
Sounds good.
Ay.
Sounds good. The more panic, the better, right? So if we were to answer that question again, what should we panic about more? Nothing. That's your answer. Don't panic. Instead, be proactive. Take action in your community where you have control.
Right. Steve and I both read a book. We've mentioned it before. We'll mention it again. It's called Amusing Ourselves to Death by Neil Postman. And he talks a lot about the news, TV. He wrote it in, what, the 80s?
85.
Yeah. So he's talking about how TV is coming in and really messing things up for everybody because it's like the speed at which we receive world news. And it's so funny because he was writing it before basically the internet, social media, and Twitter and all of that, where we're getting the news at an even faster rate now than when we were watching TV. And he was saying how bad TV was because it was detaching us from our real world and making us think that we were attached to the world in which we had no control, which incited panic, among other things.
And if this isn't the last thing, it's at least another thing. Plenty of you could be nodding your head, going along with us, be like, yeah, you're right. We shouldn't be too concerned about things that are out of control. One of the things out of my control is what everybody else does with climate change. I'll just do my thing and drive my diesel truck and, burn oil in other ways just for fun. And yet we are still connected as a world. And we have seen different things happening. California wildfires affecting the air quality in Colorado. Like, that's real. We should be concerned. We might not have a lot of control in that if you live maybe in Florida or in the Midwest. You can't control those two situations, but you can take some of that information, that influence you have, and make changes in your own life.
Well, I like the word influence here too, because you do have, in your circle of control, you have friends and you can influence them. So, you know, I like to think that my very walking to everywhere lifestyle, you know, other people see that and they're like, oh, I could just walk. Jen always does it. I don't know. I don't know if that's happening, but they see me walking every single day. It's how I get places. And another thing I think about is, oh, this is one of my pet peeves. But when you are at like pickup line at a school and you're just letting your car idle, and this is going back to climate change, right? Just because you can only do a little doesn't mean that you shouldn't do anything at all. You have to believe that even the little thing that you do, like turning off your car in the wait line, it helps a little bit. But think of this too. Know that your friends see what you do also. And maybe you could influence a friend. And maybe that friend could influence another couple of friends. And let it be a little domino effect. You know, maybe we have a little bit more control than we even realize because everybody in this world has a slightly different circle of control.
And if it seems like we get worked up about some of these issues,
I'm panicking.
Like we have a somewhat moral panic about moral panic, we realize this is out of our control. It's out of our control pretty much who listens to this or who even cares. And yet we do this.
One of my wishes coming out of this episode is that we could be a little less concerned about the things that are out of our control, but at the same time, give ourselves credit for making changes, even if they feel like they're not making a difference at all. Because if we lose that, we lose hope. And we can't lose hope.
So another part of this book is that he compares the two dystopian futures of Huxley and Orwell. If you're not familiar with those other books,
you have some homework.
That's Brave New World and 1984.
I mean, those are the two main books that they wrote, among others. But those are the two books that really highlight these two separate dystopian futures. And if you haven't read the books, you do need to. I think as a human, you really do need to be familiar with these books.
So in one case, Huxley proposes in his dystopian future that people are consumed by being
pleasured.
Entertained. Sure, entertained. Whereas in the Orwellian case, the people in 1984 are being controlled by Big Brother.
Yeah, it's like a prison state.
So you have the two situations here. Let's just simplify it. Entertained versus
imprisoned.
Right. Both of which are a form of control over our lives.
In one of them, we are controlling our own lives. And in the other one, some prison ward kind of character is controlling our lives. So you'd think, oh, well, I want to control my own life, right? That sounds good.
Yeah. And yet we panic, we fear, we dread the, you know, government overreaching into our lives, them stepping outside of what we want them to do, and they're going to start telling us we have to do this or that and get vaccinated and have show ID of proof that you're vaccinated. And we're like, that's Big Brother. That's the end of the world. And yet,
how are we spending our time every day? How much time are we looking at our phones and scrolling through, doom scrolling, if you will, scrolling through the news feed, reading the articles, watching news clips, entertaining ourselves?
What really has a hold on us? The government freely allows us in most cases, let's not talk about North Korea in this set, but to peruse whatever fits our fancy. If we want to watch cats, we watch cats.
Yeah, and no one's going to come in and forcibly take you away and bring you to room 101, which if you don't know, that's in Orwell's book. And that's where people are tortured. And then later they normally end up dying in some way. But that's not happening. What is happening is that figuratively speaking, we are taking ourselves to room 101. We are choosing to consume things that are causing us to have moral panic. So think about it. We choose what we consume. And if that's causing us moral panic, that is, maybe indirectly, but still, a choice that we made.
And so this slight difference between what's controlling us, we're controlling us, which isn't actually a good thing, or the government's controlling us, Neil Postman says, guess what, everybody? With the advent of TV, we're in a Huxleyan dystopian future. We just are.
We are to the point of amusing ourselves to death. We are seeking out that amusement. And you don't think of it as amusement, but that is what it is when you're hopping on the screen, when you're watching TV or the news, reading the articles even. We're amusing ourselves. We're choosing how to take up our time. We're allowing ourselves to get so caught up in all of these external things that we don't have control over, that what we're doing is we're letting that control how we feel, how we act, how we live. And then we forget about our own community And we forget about our own people and our own family because we're so consumed in these external things that are going on. We may not live in a prison state like in Orwell's book, but we do need to be careful that we are not creating our own prison state in our own lives.
And so when considering the next moral panic, which is really just around the corner if it hasn't already happened, I mean, very near to us all, I'm sure, is the World Cup. There was a moral panic.
I was wondering where you were going with this.
There's a moral panic that Qatar was going to host it. There's a slight moral panic because they were going to imprison homosexuals if they came into the country, if they practiced homosexuality in the country. There was a moral panic that in the Middle East, women are not treated fairly. And there was a moral panic that the workers weren't treated fairly. And then the World Cup started. And we don't talk about Qatar anymore. We talk about football. And we're amused. And we're entertained. So we're throwing it back to a World War II slogan about what to do when the next moral panic does come up. Because it will. In Britain, they have this line, which I'm sure you've heard of by now, but maybe you didn't know where it came from. It was keep calm and carry on. Because they needed the country to just keep going. They needed the country to rise and fall like the tide. Despite what was happening elsewhere in Europe, despite what might come, don't panic about the bombs falling. Please keep calm and carry on until something is actually in your control.
So what we're hoping you will do after having listened to our episode here is to also keep calm and carry on a conversation with someone. And I would add, especially if it's someone with whom you have differing opinions, because it's easy to get worked up. And wouldn't it be great if we could have a conversation with someone and hear each other and be kind and listen and also talk?
Yes. We are Red Weather Christians.
I'm Jen.
And I'm Steve. We hope you'll feel empowered to question the rules you follow,
fear mediocrity,
and keep calm and carry on
a conversation.